Welcome to Season 6 of the Fight Science Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Sullivan. In this series, we are continuing our journey of broadening our knowledge in the field of combat sports science by speaking to experts in the fields of nutrition science, psychology, strength and conditioning, and much more to help you become the best practitioner you can be. Today, our guest on the podcast is Heather Linden. Heather is the Director of Physical Therapy at the UFC Performance Institute Las Vegas and is the go-to physical therapist for many of the world's leading combat sports athletes. In this episode, we are going to be breaking down Heather's contributions to the UFC PI's latest journal and talk about how the UFC Performance Institute is implementing state-of-the-art sports medicine in order to keep their athletes in peak physical condition. There's a lot to cover, so let's get to it. All right, our new friend on Zoom has told us we've started recording, so that means we are live. So back for another episode of the Fight Science Podcast. We have another return guest all the way from Las Vegas, from the UFC Performance Institute, the Director of Physical Therapy, the one and only Heather Linden.
Thank you, Jordy. That's so nice.
What an intro. I thought I was going to stuff that up somewhere, but there we go. We got through it. But Heath, what's been happening? The last time we spoke was it during COVID? Must have been during COVID. All I had time to do was podcast during COVID.
I know, that's crazy, right? Oh my gosh, so much has happened too, because I mean, obviously we're back on the road. We now have live events going. We published a massive journal that probably was the death of most of us. And we've just been busy. So there's a lot actually that's been going on here at the PI.
Yeah. Talk to us about it, how that transition was, because obviously, like you said, UFC just did not slow down. They're like the one company in the world that just said, no, I don't care about it. We're going to keep going. And you guys did all of that. You managed to keep operating during COVID. And like you said, you wrote this monster behemoth of a journal, which is the most up-to-date, what I would consider the most up-to-date knowledge of the modern MMA athlete that we have so far. What was it like juggling all of that?
Yeah, so it was pretty chaotic. I mean, not only did we have, I think we had more events in the Apex than we've ever had in the world anywhere else. So Las Vegas was home to a million fights that were happening through this entire pandemic. And so we had athletes every week coming in, you know, for fights and following crazy COVID protocols and creating small bubbles so that we were able to be successful. At the same time, you had athletes coming in that were hoping to get a fight or were unable to train in the areas where they were living because of COVID restrictions. So I feel like this is the busiest time the UFC PI has ever had in the 4 years that we've been open. That being said, we published this 400-page journal of just stacked with data that we've collected. It's actually really cool to see how much data we've come up with over these, you know, 4 years. And I mean, the journal information is over a 3-year period, and it's crazy to see from journal one to journal two. You know, journal one was this small little simple, you know, almost packet that, you know, was distributed with some cool factual information. But now it's literally a textbook, right? It has all disciplines of multiple professions that have come together. And the coolest thing is this also came together with our team from Shanghai. So we had two teams of full interdisciplinary professions working together to see now how training and everything is sculpted and all the information we've kind of got out of it over the last 3 years.
It's just like you said, 3 years of all the most up-to-date knowledge that we have. So let's jump straight into it. So a cross-sectional performance analysis and projection of the UFC athlete volume 2. So obviously we'll be focusing on the physical therapy and the sports medicine side. It's broken up into 5 parts. So let's start with part 1, strategy and goals. There's a section there that you're heavily involved in the orthopedic evaluation trends. Can you talk to us about that, Heath?
Yeah, Jordy. So a little bit before we jump right into that, you know, the medical team, we were involved in 18 sections of this journal, which is, you know, pretty intense. Used all the, all my teammates, you know, from here and Shanghai, put all the information, collected all the data, analyzed it and stuff like that to come up with the medical sections. We had over 1,344 injuries that went into all of this section when it came to medical, which is a huge database of injuries. I mean, I don't think there's ever been that many injuries that we're able to analyze and see what's going on. We were also able to, for this, you know, section that you just mentioned, the orthopedic evaluation trends, we did 175 baseline assessments of athletes. So though we have a long way to go, 175 is only a small component of, you know, the UFC. I think we finally have the data on these athletes to kind of start to continue to look at the trends. And what's pretty cool is the trends that we saw in volume one for the orthopedic injury. Sorry, I have, I don't know if this is, but this is an automatic light. Sorry about that. But what we were able to see here is that these trends continued, you know, that initially what we speculated for these athletes, it continues to grow and it continues, you know, to show exactly the same stuff that we thought we would see.
Yeah. Yeah. Excellent. And I guess it is. And I'm looking through it now, even the injury characteristics. And I think mixed martial arts is such a new sport that we don't really have a lot of data. When you go to look at it, you're always feeding on almost off other sports, hey? And then you're using the other combat sports and trying to make inferences about it. What did you find when you guys looked at all this data about the injury characteristics of an MMA fighter?
Yeah. So when we started looking at injury characteristics, it's pretty cool. I mean, again, we have to deal with the day-to-day of our injury characteristics where athletes don't necessarily report all of the training injuries, right? Because they're all over the world. So they're dealing with these training injuries coming and going. But, you know, we were able to look at 80% of the fight injuries and look at different trends that we've seen. We've been able to see, again, you know, during fight, we see striking being, you know, the most significant way of injuries. We cross over to grappling really being more of those, you know, training injuries and things like that. We can break it down into the body parts. So we were able to see exactly what injuries are happening per body part, in the fight as well as training. And it's pretty cool because the numbers that we see from the fight usually tend to transfer over to the training as well in the same chronological order, just obviously at a smaller basis. We also can look at, you know, what pathologies are occurring. And this helps us look at, you know, where are we looking to prevent these injuries? Are there injuries that can be prevented? And it's pretty interesting. The more and more we start looking at types of injuries that are happening, what body parts they are, you know, affecting, you know, what affects men versus women, because we do see different trends on that when it comes to types of injuries that are occurring depending on, you know, what gender it is. I just think we're starting to really look at injury analysis and understand it where we need to be, you know. There's nothing really in this section that is completely out of the ordinary. We do see that the most frequent injuries in men are resolving within a 39 day period, and women like a 33 day period. So, you know, most of the injuries that we see a month out are resolved, which people think of MMA being a very traumatic sport, right? But when we break it down into injury resolution, you know, most of these injuries are within that month long range, which, you know, isn't a very long period when we're looking at longevity of athletes and career ending injuries and things like that. So I think that's pretty cool to be able to start to put numbers on how long all of these injuries take. It also pushes us as a staff to try to be cutting edge when it comes to rehabilitations, when they're non-fight injuries, you know, and when we can, how do we get them back? Are we getting them back in a safe form? Are they returning back to sport 100% after these injuries? And then how long did it take us to do the rehabs? So I think what's really cool from this is now we've decided our next goal is to start to actually type out the rehab protocols that we do. So, you know, a lot of times when someone gets a surgical rehab, you know, the surgeon will hand out, here's their protocol for that injury. Now, one of the cool things is what we're doing is we're doing it from an interdisciplinary approach, which I've never really seen before. We've seen, you know, this is what the surgeon says, you're going to do range of motion, you're going to do, you know, incision, you know, you're going to do pain management. And now we're looking at, you know, how do you pull in nutrition and fuel that athlete for the right aspects of recovery and rehab? How does strength and conditioning play a part into that? How does sports science, all of that kind of stuff, you know, is playing various parts, which I think is just going to drive us to be really cutting edge when it comes to the rehabilitations of professional athletes.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Hey, Heather, was there anything when you looked at this data, obviously you're on the ground, you're working with these athletes all day, every day. When you guys put it out, was there anything that kind of surprised you in the trends that, oh, or were these pretty much what you expected from, you know, treating these athletes every day?
It's actually pretty expected, I would say, from seeing them every day and them coming in from a more grappling based session, a more striking based session. I mean, I feel like it's almost to the point where an athlete can walk in now, and if they give me the mechanism of injury, what part of training it occurred in, I can pretty much come up with, okay, you're feeling this, this, and this, this is probably where your symptoms are. And they look at me like, oh my gosh, yeah, you're right. How do you know? But I've heard it so many times repetitively from seeing so many athletes. Though this does open the doors for a great conversation when it comes to ligaments of knees and things like that, it's just brought me more aware of this MMA athlete. And one of the things and trends I'm seeing a lot, you know, we see a lot of knee pain. It happens to be one of the most common top 10 diagnoses that we see. But when I start realizing and really analyzing their knees, I'm seeing a lot of instability. So, you know, I think there's a lot of ligament micro tears that are occurring from mechanisms of kicking, from, you know, grappling, doing, you know, pulling guard, doing things in various positions that can, you know, affect the ligaments of the knee and the stability of it. And I think over time, these athletes are so good at, you know, accommodating for any kind of instabilities and gaining strength in areas and getting over, you know, things that most people wouldn't be able to, or they think they would need a surgical intervention or something like that. And these athletes are being able to be highly functional with no limitations. So, you know, the information that we're starting to pull out of the diagnoses that we're seeing is really making me expand where I want to do more research, look at more of this MMA athlete, because, you know, we see a lot of ACL injuries in this population. And, you know, I had a guy the other day that came in with some knee pain and he was getting ready for a fight. And I just happened to, of course, like check all the ligaments. And, you know, in my head, I was going, I'm not sure he has any ligaments, you know what I mean? And he went out, performed one, did a fabulous, you know, is like, I don't have any issues. And in my head, you know, if anybody were to possibly, you know, clinician to test that knee, they'd be like, oh my gosh, this guy needs knee surgery immediately. But his knee has been that way for 5 years and he's learned how to accommodate and, you know, be very successful.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm thinking of the crossover between other sports, because I'm thinking of this, say, from the nutrition side. Say when practitioners are going through uni or their education, I don't remember from when I was at uni, like, you know, 8-10 years ago, we never did any combat sports specific anything really. And it was all like generic team sports or endurance sports. I'm assuming it's probably the same in physiotherapy school. Say if there's a practitioner and there's an MMA fighter that just comes in, is there a lot of crossover that you find, say, from other sports like team sports or individual sports? Or are you now finding that, you know, MMA is kind of a bit of a beast on its own that you have to really understand that specific sport?
It's a beast of its own. I mean, there's not a ton, you know, you do see the athletes that crossover. You do see some of the football players that come over, some of the wrestlers that come over. I mean, wrestling, I kind of already put into that combat section, right, already. So I pull them out of it. But when you look at football, you look at other some sports that they've crossed over, I feel like it doesn't even compare. I feel like, you know, MMA is a beast in itself and there's so many components going on at all times. Like, it's amazing when you break these athletes down. Like when we used to evaluate athletes at the Olympic Training Center, so let's say track and field, you know, their mechanics, their run mechanics are so prestige and so amazing. And when you start to break the MMA athlete down, they're just, it's like the wild, wild west, man. They figure out that like they can use your body in ways that like normal athletes wouldn't be able to, you know. And there's other things like, you know, I'll see athletes running and they're barefoot athletes, right? These athletes every day are barefoot and you go to put them in shoes and start running or doing sprints and things. Half the time the running mechanics is atrocious. And then they come in with Achilles tendonitis because they're doing long distance runs for weight cuts maybe, or, you know, sprints up hills, things like that. You're also then seeing them barefoot in, you know, training every day. We're finding that they have really poor intrinsic foot muscles. And then they wonder why they're coming in with Achilles issues. I mean, we're also starting to see more Achilles tears in this population. And I think that's, you know, one of the sections we did in here was called the barefoot athlete. And we made sure to like put some components of, you know, the trends we see in this orthopedic evaluation is most of this athletes range from 5 to 6 millimeters of a drop from a navicular drop, which is going to be that midfoot drop. And these athletes, you know, you want to see the athletes that I would see in the past are like 1-2 millimeters. You know, they were just so on top of working from the ground up and looking at the foot as their, you know, main stability, as what's going to generate the power and force as they do their day-to-day training skills, their day-to-day, you know, endurance skills and things like that. And we definitely see in this population that that's not something that's, you know, out there that they're not training. So
yeah, it is interesting, hey. And it's like, because I always think of practitioners when they ask for advice, or if it, we get a lot of students, and me and Clint were talking about this, and I had a student say, hey, I'm very interested in like what you do, like, do you have any resources? I was like, go read this volume and see what you think of it. And they came back and they're like, oh my gosh, it's so different to what I've been learning and with team sports. And it is, like you said, it's a beast on its own. But hey, Heath, there's something you mentioned there with the common injuries, and something that a lot of people are familiar with is concussion, and it's a huge topic right now. It makes sense, right? Like we're in a sport and we're consistently taking trauma to the head. Talk to us about this. And you speak about it a lot in the off camp in that part two here, and managing concussion, the symptoms, evaluation, diagnostics, and then the return to sport. Can you talk to us about that?
Yeah. You know, that is definitely something day to day that we're, you know, it's that topic that is that word that you don't really want to say, but you know, it's time to talk about it. It's time to, you know, really be leading edge when it comes to looking at concussion. And one of the things we wanted to do in the journal is first just, you know, the journal is a very, I would say, basic form of concussion, what a concussion is, and what our return to sport protocol looks like. Obviously, when it comes to concussion, I do recommend having a medical provider, you know, being that person that's going to lead that return to sport back and looking at symptoms. But concussion in this age, you know, initially, I would say when I first started with UFC, you know, it wasn't as prevalently diagnosed as I would have thought it would be. Whether it was just athletes not educated on it, what a concussion is, or coaches not educated on what a concussion is. But now we're seeing a lot more athletes coming in, you know, with some small minor concussions. I mean, the best thing about it is most of them within a 2-week environment, you know, are returned back to baseline and stuff like that. But what we wanted to do here is really explain, you know, what concussion is and educate not only athletes, but also coaches on here's what symptoms are. You know, first, initially, athletes are always thinking it's got to be all really bad, right? Because of concussion. But concussion can literally be just, you know, a little bit of a headache, you know, maybe not quite feeling right, you know, maybe they feel more fatigued than normal. But when you look at it, they've just undergone like a very hard, strenuous fight. So they are going to be fatigued, but it's deciphering between that kind of fatigue and everything like that. We also wanted to throw in the red flag symptoms into the journal. So, you know, there's been some examples we've seen also in boxing where, you know, symptoms have taken to this level. We wanted to make sure coaches were educated on, you know, if all of a sudden something isn't right and you're seeing any of these, this is so important for you to make sure that you are taking these athletes to medical providers and getting treatment done. The other thing we wanted to do is, you know, kind of show everybody what our detailed evaluations look like. You know, we've done baselines on C3 logic when it comes to concussions, and it's really nice. We've had athletes recently that, you know, underwent a concussion in a pretty, you know, brutal fight that they were in. And we were able to pull their baseline, give it to their provider that was across the country, work on the appropriate rehab for the areas that were, you know, different in the baseline, and then actually return them to a higher level than even the baseline before we cleared them for any kind of contact and stuff like that. So, you know, I applaud that coach and that manager for reaching out to us and saying, you know, like, hey, I want my guys to have a really long career. I want to make sure I'm not, you know, cutting any corners and making sure that athletes' health is a priority. And they did that. And being able to use C3 logic, you know, neurocognitive testing and looking at baselines, it just allowed us to look at so much more. But initially, you know, in this section, we kind of talk about what our evaluation looks like. You know, obviously, a very detailed history when it comes to concussions, looking at different medications they're on, looking at cranial nerves, doing a very thorough cervical spine exam, and then bringing in all of the neurocognitive testing. You know, we're looking at vestibular, we're looking at memory, we're looking at short-term, long-term, all of those kind of things, which play a huge role. The really cool thing is when we start to look at baselines on our athletes, they're very different than what you would assume. You know, our baselines, our athletes, you know, like we said, are their own breed. And by actually having like trends and stuff when it comes to concussions, we could see exactly, you know, where we are. We can see where their balance is compared to the, you know, general athletic population. We can see where their symptom scores are, things like that. And that just allows us to really understand exactly what's going on in each individual athlete. We also were, is the first time they made a big deal about us publishing like our return to sport protocol. And I will say that this return to sport protocol in the journal is, you know, a shortened version of kind of even more what we have. If you're a licensed medical provider, there's some other stuff that we've added to it and made it quite detailed, just so you know exactly what's going on. But, you know, I think it's an easy way to look at the stages for coaches, for athletes, and say, you know, am I hitting all these stages? These stages don't have to take long if you have, you know, a very minor concussion. You know, symptoms sometimes, you know, on average clear up between 10 and 14 days, but you want to make sure you go through all of these stages. You know, you don't want to skip any of the stages. You want to make sure you're easing back into things, even if you're asymptomatic, because the crazy thing about concussion is on the outside, you might not have any symptoms, but that doesn't mean your brain isn't still healing. And, you know, you want to make sure you take care of that. We only get one of those in our lifetime. And, you know, we want to make sure that the athletes are doing everything. So we got together with, you know, our strength and conditioning, our sports science, our, you know, sports psychology. And we really put a pretty thorough, detailed stage by stage intensity level that we would follow getting those athletes back.
Yeah, it's something I'm sure you appreciate as well, Heather, but I didn't really appreciate the full extent to it until Dan, our physio, who's doing a PhD in concussion, started breaking it down to all the different types. You can have a vestibular concussion, a oculomotor concussion, you know, all these different types of concussion. I just thought, oh my gosh, like, it's crazy how detailed it can be.
And they're all different. I mean, we broke it down, I think it was six categories. You know, we have a vestibular one, which is, you know, going to be your balance and awareness where you are in space. You have your ocular motor one, which is going to be vision. You have just a cervicogenic, which is literally, you know, can be neck tightness, pressure in the head, joint TMJ tenderness, which can trigger that. We have migraine and headache. We have just anxiety and mood. And then we also have cognitive, which is going to be your memory, short-term retrieving everything, your reaction time. So if you can break it down into all of these components, then you can treat it. Like, you know, we see a lot of clinicians out there treating concussions exactly the same, right? You're going to rest, you're going to do low intensity, then you're going to do mild, moderate, and then you return to sport and figure out that. But, you know, what are, as clinicians, we need to, you know, strive to be better in this field, especially in this diagnosis, that's a lot of unknowns. So breaking it down by doing testing to see, you know, what component of that brain is a little bit delayed. You know, I've seen athletes, I had one athlete with a concussion after a fight that initially had some visual deficits. You know, every time they would look fast, they'd see kind of double or it'd be delayed. So, you know, we progressed them initially from just looking and reading eye charts to then even being on a slide board back and forth reading eye charts and having to call and skip lines and things like that. And he was like, oh my gosh, you know, all my vision issues went away. And then literally maybe a week later, he wrote me and he's like, you know, I do get this weird thing that still that, you know, is normal for me, I think, but every time I get up out of bed, you know, the room spins a little or this happens. And I was like, that's not actually normal. Like that doesn't happen to most of us, you know? And I was able to give him some, you know, rehab exercises that work with the ear crystals within your ear, BPVV. And within two sessions that had resolved, and he was like, wow, you know, I would have just lived my day-to-day life probably with feeling a little. And I always thought maybe it's because I cut weight. Maybe it's because I, you know, I'm fasting in the morning or something like that. But I was like, it actually was an inner ear issue that we had to realign all the ear crystals and stuff. So by breaking it out and starting to look at the various subcomponents of concussion, it just makes us as clinicians be better prepared to treat that area and make sure that athlete gets full resolution.
Yeah, Heather, say that there's guys listening to this and say they don't have access to a lot of the equipment to do this. And we're talking about baseline and getting these baseline measures and then assessing where you are from the baseline, say post-concussion. Say if you were breaking it down into these six categories that guys at just home, then maybe they don't have access to all these things that they could just start mentally listing or writing down or taking note of that they could use as their baseline.
So actually, one of the things that I think we used at the Olympic Training Center, which is a really quick sideline baseline that you can print off the internet. So like SCAT5, which is well known. I mean, IOC uses it. There's multiple sporting professional organizations that use SCAT. You can print that off. And the cool thing about SCAT is it breaks it down into these subconditions. So first is a symptom check. And that kind of shows you, you know, where is that irritation? Are you complaining about vision stuff? Are you complaining about headaches? Are you complaining about dizziness? Things like that. Then it breaks it down into, you know, a few recall things that you might have to test on, you know, like, okay, remember these words. And I mean, you could even have somebody, you know, your coach or somebody go through this quick thing just to give you a screen of where these things are normally for you. Now, obviously, I'm going to preach that, you know, it's ideal if there's a medical person in your area that could do this for you because they know what they're looking for, right? So, you know, get together with your local physical therapist, sports chiro, athletic trainer, you know, someone that you know and you feel comfortable with and have them run you through. I mean, you could print these papers off the internet, do this baseline testing, and then you have a baseline in your pocket. And then if you're, you know, somewhere else training or something happens, you put those copy of the results on your phone, and wherever you're at, you could probably find someone to run you through it again, another medical provider. And then you can see, okay, where are things off? And you can use, you know, information like this journal to say, oh, wow, you know, I feel like all my issues are with the memory stuff on these things compared to last. So you're going to look, okay, it's more cognitive. This is now you need to look at attention, memory. So you're going to do stuff to do short-term memory, long-term memory. I mean, as simple as what was the card game that you would flip over, remember, like memory, right? Like you can do things like as simple as that to start to really get those. You can do brain games on your phone. There's so many apps that you can download like that today that can help with things like that. You know, you can, if it's more vision, you're seeing double vision, you're seeing, you know, slow delayed vision, tracking seems off, you know, there's eye charts and things that you can print off and read, or even just stepping back from a sign and do it, trying to read it, or a computer screen. Like there's things that you can do really at a pretty cheap way. I do recommend when you are dealing with anything with the brain that you do work with a, you know, a licensed medical clinician, because they will be able to guide you, I think, a little bit better professionally, but you know, you can do cheaper versions of all of this.
Yeah. I know you just went over that then, you summarized it really well. But just so the guys listening, it kind of drills into their head before they hurt their head to the point of no return. What would be your low-hanging fruit of signs and symptoms that would warrant a check? Say someone's just at the gym and say they get, I don't know, they get rocked with a big two, or, you know, they just get thrown and they bang their head and they get up and they're like, oh, geez, I'm a bit weird. What would be the low-hanging fruit, signs and symptoms? Yeah, you should probably go to that medical clinician and get checked out.
Yep. So initially I would say, you know, you might feel a little bit of a headache. I would say that is going to be probably, but then people have come back to me and been like, oh my gosh, well, I get headaches every day after sparring. Well, you know, that does tell you that you've had some kind of inflammation and trauma. So, you know, we're doing some research on some cryo aspects that, you know, can cool the carotid after sparring and things like that, that might be really beneficial and cheap in the future, simply cooling down, you know, the brain and head and stuff like that after a hard sparring session. But you really want to look for, you know, do you have a headache? Do you not quite feel right? You know, I've had numerous athletes say to me the next day, they don't want to get up, or they don't feel as motivated that day. And, you know, as a professional athlete, I would say, especially with MMA, man, these guys train all the time. There's rarely a time where they're like, I don't want to train, right? Like, so when you start seeing any of that, I would say that's an issue. If the vision, you know, if you get up from laying down in your bed and you feel a little bit dizzy, you know, things like that are all things to start to look at. If you can't sleep at night, these are all mild symptoms, you know, that make up concussion, and that you should definitely, like, you know, talk to someone if those symptoms are happening after a really rough sparring session, or if you have a fight, you know, after a fight that you've just done. And, you know, realize that taking it easy is probably key. You know, there's so many times right after a fight, you see people out at the clubs, partying, lights going, drinking. And it's like, those are pretty much the worst things you could possibly do. You know, maybe try a little more settled approach, you know, keep that brain health. But there's also a huge aspect, you know, from your side, from nutrition, right? Like, I work with our nutritionist. There's a lot of, you know, omegas and brain stuff that you can take right after a fight, which would be really beneficial for you. And we're working, you know, to get even more detailed approach when it comes to that kind of stuff and how that cohesively works together from a sports medicine and a nutrition aspect.
Yeah, it's funny. Hey, one of my business partners, does boxing, and he got rocked one training session. He's like, oh man, I don't feel right in my head. And I remember sending him Charles concussion protocol, and he used it, and he messaged me about 3-4 hours later. He's like, I don't know what little wizardry this is, but I feel better. And, you know, whether that's a placebo or not. And I said to him, I was like, look, they don't mess around over there at the PI. Charles is a clever cookie. He knows what he's doing.
Yes, he is. I mean, it's all about, right, reducing inflammation, hydrating what needs to. I mean, people don't realize that with a concussion, we think of symptoms that you're going to obviously see, right? I'm going to have a headache. I'm going to have this. But there is so much going on internally in that brain. You know, you have neurotransmitters that can get damaged. You have inflammation that can change the chemistry of the brain that can lead to the depression and all the other symptoms that we eventually get. But if you don't have that bad of a concussion, but that still is changing some of the chemical reactions that you have in your brain, and you want to make sure all of that normalizes, right? So we're finding nutrition to be a huge aspect and a huge component working collaboratively. You know, it used to just be like, oh, put that person to the medical team, right? But that's not true. I mean, we're even using our sports science to track the sleep. You know, is there sleep disturbances because of it? Is there fueling and nutrition appropriate for healing? Are they doing what they need to from a medical standpoint? So again, it's looking at things as that interdisciplinary approach. And, you know, that's something that we really hold to a high standard here.
Yeah. I was talking to someone about this the other day. The mark of a really good clinician and practitioner is that their ability to step back and not just look through everything through their own lens. Like you and I can talk about concussion and I'll look through it through the nutrition lens and you'll look through it through the PT lens, but can you step back and can you integrate everything into that?
I had a professional athlete that from American football come to me recently, and I was working with them, and, you know, I did a full evaluation, and they're like, gosh, nobody's ever looked at from my head to my toe in the 8 years I was in the NFL. Like maybe in college they did it, but never like what you just did. And then he's like, you know, I was like, well, you have a little bit like some ligament issues and some cartilage issues. So he was like, okay, well, I was like, well, you need to, you know, talk to nutrition. There's so much you can do with collagen and things like that. He's like, okay, what do I need to get? And I was like, oh, no. That's not my house. Like, I can tell you there's a lot out there, but that's not my hat to wear. That's not where I'm an expert. And I don't feel like you said, then I put, you know, I was like, I can give you XYZ's phone number who knows what they're doing and actually is going to give the best information for you, because, you know, you have to look at it from an interdisciplinary, but that's why you have these great colleagues around you to, you know, fill in those gaps for you where you need.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Something you said there, Heather, and I think every fighter or anyone that works with them can resonate with that, is fighters are sometimes too tough and they're too tough for their own good. And I think this part of the volume that you have up, the managing training around injury, because you and I, even just saying that, I'm thinking of 10, 20 different fighters who always train through injury, always keep going. I want to hear your thoughts and opinions on it. What did you guys find and what are your thoughts on it?
This is definitely probably the section that most athletes will be like, sure, Heather, whatever. But we get so many injuries. I mean, day to day, we look at these athletes are performing at their optimal level every training session, right? And there's 3 training sessions a day. So, you know, we really wanted to take a step back and look at what you can do day to day. So, you know, some of the things that we've seen, a lot of injuries, you know, might be debilitating on that certain joint or something like that, but we have a million other things we can be doing, right? There's a million other things that these athletes can do to keep that training going. There is, you know, strength and conditioning that we partner with that they can address any of the other body parts that aren't injured. You know what I mean? We use passive and active recovery for everything. So, you know, there's ways that we can still feel like they're doing a lot of training, even if they have an injury. We use a ton of BFR, blood flow restriction, when it comes to these injuries so that these athletes, you know, feel like they're doing a lot. And it's crazy. You put BFR on these guys and they're like, this is the hardest session ever, you know? So it's a matter of, you know, making them feel like they've still achieved what they need to achieve, but then also, you know, making sure that that rehab goes successful. So many times in MMA, I have seen athletes just want to throw a band-aid and just keep pushing through, right? They're like, oh, it's fine, da 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 da, like, we can get through this. But it will rear its head up again. So it's a matter of actually addressing, you know, what that injury is, what caused that injury, and yet still continuing your day-to-day training and everything like that. it's also communicating with your interdisciplinary team and your coaches. Like, you know, so many athletes are scared to go to a coach and say, like, I can't do this, right? So you have to be that liaison with, like, hey, coach, you know, I rarely tell an athlete that they can't train. Like, that's one thing athletes are like, Heather, you just, and I'm like, there's always ways around it, right? You know, you're in a sport that has so many components. It's even easier than other professional organizations because, you know, maybe if your arm's injured, you're doing lower body footwork, shadow box. Like, there's so much you can improve on. And, you know, that's how I try to address it with our athletes is, you know, work on those flaws that you have. This is the time, you know, I can't tell you how many guys that, you know, have shoulder injury and they get to finally work on that, you know, other arm and work on either a jab or a hook or something that they haven't done in a long time. And they end up being even more strong and, you know, weeding through that. So, you know, what we looked at here is we just said, you know, don't always push through these injuries. Work with a team, you know, whether it's therapist, you know, physicians, technical coaches, work at the team and sit down and talk about what you still can do, but yet how you can still address the injured area. So, you know, we look at, you know, training time, training schedule, you know, making sure I like to tell athletes to, when they are training, to have a day and a half of recovery. So whether it's a Wednesday afternoon where they don't do anything sport specific or a Sunday, you know, work with the team and figure out your training schedule, because that's obviously going to start to minimize your risk of injury. Also looking at warm-up exercises. These guys literally are like, okay, let me just get in the, you know, let me get in the octagon. Let me just, you know, I'm sparring. Here's a few stretches, my arms, I'm good. And then they're like, I don't understand why my shoulders, I'm like, you didn't warm up your shoulder. You didn't activate the muscles around your shoulder. So, you know, these exercises that you're doing for warm-up should address your physical limitations impacting that injury and prepare you for the higher demands that you're training. Scheduling recovery sessions, whether it's cryotherapy, whether it's Normatec, whether it's, you know, getting massage therapy, something like that, you know, taking all of the recovery aspects that you can and put it in your own hands. You know, I get it can get expensive. And I get if you're a new young athlete, that might be a really tough thing to put your money where it's at. But there's ways to, you know, whether it's maybe once a month, you know, if you have to start just to get some body work done. It should also be, you know, there's so many things you can do. You can do self-care. You know, we had a self-care chapter in this as well, you know, whether it's foam rolling, stretching, whether it's, you know, anything that you can do to help prevent injuries is going to help you on the other side. So, and then again, just really good communication, right? Communication with your team. You know, if you can get a coach to understand why you're recommending, hey, can we not do this for two, give me 2 days, give me a day, you know, and let's get through this one aspect so this injury doesn't happen again, while he can still do X, Y, and Z. You know, if you're filling in those coaches, they're not going to be like, oh God, medical. They want to pull you out. They're so annoying. They're literally going to be like, oh, cool. Heather gave me like 7 other ideas of things we can do. Let's keep doing this. We can still train, but you can address actually what's going on. And that's really what we wanted to say in this section, you know?
Yeah. So your top tips, Heather, add to these if I've missed anything. But effective warm-ups, make sure you schedule in your recovery, alternative training, if you can do it and you can get around it, and talk to your coach and keep that communication. Anything else you'd add in?
You know, the other thing I would say with exactly MMA athletes that I think is huge, and I, you know, I actually spoke with an athlete today. So we have an athlete coming off an injury, rehabbing, just got a fight signed, super excited. So now he's back, you know, training fully and walks in yesterday, barely able to walk. And we're like, what do you do? He's like, well, I did this session. And, you know, talking to them about, hey, plan out your camps, right? Plan out your on and off seasons. I think that's what this whole journal is about, is looking as a year long athlete and making sure you're planning out things. So, you know, we have a team that is absolutely, they're super successful, but literally week 5, they shut it down at their camp. And they literally are like, okay, we're going to come to the PI, or we're going to focus more where we're at on recovery, rehab, technical training, stuff that's not going to wear and tear the body. Because we do see over and over again, that final last 2 weeks is when these athletes are getting injured. So we always say, you know, why is it 8 weeks? Why is it 8 weeks? But if you manage your training load and you actually take science and information and be able to communicate with coaches on how you're feeling and what you're doing, you're way more successful in managing injuries and not having those injuries rear their head again and again and again. And use your off season to manage the actual injuries. You know, I no problem throwing a Band-Aid on fight week and getting you through that fight and be as successful as possible. But I do love when you come back to me and say, okay, Heath, you mentioned this during fight week. How do I do something about it? And that's really what we want to educate athletes on doing, is taking that into their own hands and managing injuries.
That's a good segue into this last section I want to talk to you about, and that is fight week. And anyone that has seen you in action in fight week, you're probably the most busiest person, the most in-demand person, I would say, in fight week. I never envy the hours you have to do during that 5 days or so. But Heath, talk to us about Section 78, the role of medical services during fight week.
Oh man, it is our busiest time. And it's also our most rewarding time, right? When you have an athlete that comes in with some kind of injury and you're getting them, you know, fixed up, ready to go. But it's also looking at not only injuries, but recovery, skin, you know, infections and wound care, you know, looking at cramping. You know, just the other day we had an athlete with a poor weight cut, you know, where medical got called and we had to, you know, assess vitals, see if this athlete was able to continue cutting. So there's a huge role when it comes to medical emergencies that is on the road that people don't even think about. I mean, I had a new grad that I was talking to, and they're like, how do you know all this stuff? And I was really fortunate from the Olympic Training Center that we had emergency medicine every day. When you have 500 athletes training on campus, you're going to have bones being fractured, dislocations, athletes passing out, you know, you become that physician extender. So I'm really fortunate that I got that experience, which carried over really well here. But, you know, we're doing recovery massages, we're doing mobilization manipulation, we're bringing our recovery services of Normatech and Game Ready on the road. Usually it's just one clinician. And so, like you said, we are slammed. You're doing, you know, 12 to 15 hour days, because sometimes you have 26 athletes to, you know, make sure they're getting to that octagon at the optimal level. But it's also the most rewarding, you know, when you have an athlete come in that fight week and they say, you know, they have a radiculopathy, you know, numbness and tingling in their arm from their neck. And you clear that up in the week that you're seeing them. And they're like, man, I was able to, you know, knock a guy out because I could actually use my arm. You know, yeah, your heart breaks for one, but you're at the same time, you know, your job was done and that you did it pretty successful in that sense. And the minute these athletes walk into the octagon healthy, or at the most minimal injuries, you know, your job is so rewarding in that sense. So we get to do a lot. You know, we are on our feet. We are traveling. Yes, we get to travel, but I will say 90% of what we travel is in a hotel room. You know what I mean? Setting up a sports medicine clinic in the hotel room for these athletes. You know, we also are able to help if there's any kind of skin infections. We have a really good product called Duoderm that really clears up where different skin infections at a faster rate. So we use that when we're with us. We also, you know, are doing stretching. Sometimes we're doing pre-fight muscle activation and warm-ups. Sometimes we're doing end of the night flushes. Just, you know, it just depends on, you know, what the athlete needs, and being really pliable and very flexible to be able to, you know, make sure we have all that with us.
What would your top tips be, Heath, for the fighters that say aren't quite at the UFC yet? They're at a lower level. They're coming up. But they want to make sure that they're doing their fight week as best they can, so they can too go into that octagon or ring or whatever it is in the best shape as possible.
So I think bringing it back to, you know, if you have an athlete where you don't have a medical person traveling with you, right? Anything like that, I would look into really doing, you know, some of those self-care things, whether it's, you know, doing a cold bath at night, you know, making in the hotel that you're at, getting ice, having it delivered and doing a cold flush, you know, or whether it's learning a really good dynamic stretching or, you know, passive stretching modalities where you can, you know, at the end of the night, cool down and stretch and everything like that. You could use foam rollers, tennis balls, golf balls, you know, to really sit in those areas that get really tight or that you're sore. You know, a lot of times they'll complain about the back of their shoulders. So it's really nice to get like a small golf ball or tennis ball and roll that out. Travel with a little foam roller, travel with some bands to do some stretching, some flossing. All of those are really simple ways that, you know, everybody that's not at this level can do. And, you know, if you have the access to, you know, getting some body work done, maybe that week, one day, you know, wherever you're at is also very helpful. But, you know, making sure you're just doing everything that the nutrition team says, you know, from that aspect. So, you know, one thing that I think is interesting that most guys don't realize is that fight week, for some reason, as you start cutting out the different substrates and stuff, most old injuries kind of rear their heads. You know, I've had athletes like, oh my gosh, you know, I hurt that a long time ago. Why is that bothering me? And start to a little bit panic that, you know, that injury is, you know, flared up again and going to bother them. But really the minute everything starts getting added back, you know, they get rehydrated, most of those things really clear up. And then it's just putting the fine tune, you know, comb on that and really getting through that. So.
Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. It's funny how dehydration the body can do. I remember having someone who had like a hand injury. He was like, man, I haven't had this injury in like 3 years. What's going on? Why am I feeling it? It's like, oh, just part of cutting weight.
It's part of cutting weight. So people don't realize, I'd love to know more of the science behind that eventually, but yeah, it's pretty cool.
Hey, Ed, what advice would you give to physios that may not work in this area, but say that they're getting a couple of MMA athletes here and there, and they're going, you know what, this is a different beast. This is an entirely different beast to these team sports or endurance athletes that I'm used to working with. What advice would you give them to allow them to treat those guys a bit better?
So I think one thing you can do, especially as a new person, is just even watch, you know, go to maybe where they're training and take a few hours and watch what the demands of the sport is on their bodies to better understand that. And then the next thing I would say, hands down, I've just noticed is the most important, is when you're looking at athletes, they might come in for one injury and you want to make that injury feel good so bad, treat the body as a whole. Because if you actually eval that whole body and understand where that injury came from, you are going to change that athlete's life. Where instead, if you're only treating that joint, you know, you might just make them feel good. But if they're doing the same thing in training the next day, they're going to feel like crap again. And you're going to, you know, just keep going down a wheel. So look at the whole body, try to find the origin of what's happening. And if you don't know a lot about MMA, go to a training session and maybe even chatting with a coach and an athlete to hear, you know, what are their objectives? What are they, you know, what does the coach see? Because a lot of times coaches might say like, you know, he does this weird thing with a jab, or he does this, or I don't know. You can look and be like, oh, well, he doesn't get the ankle mobility, or he drops his foot on this. And, you know, you're not the coach. You're never going to be that coach. But biomechanically, you can look at the different components and see where these little things can happen.
Yeah, that's a great answer. Very last question, Ed, before I let you go and get back to your work day. 4 years. You said this is the 4 years of the UFCPI. You've been there from the start. Did you ever envision that this service and what you're doing would ever get to the stage that it is now when you walk through those doors 4 years ago?
So I had old colleagues of mine that said within 2 years, those doors will be closed, but I'm kind of a ball buster and I want to change professional sports. And, you know, you put me as a director of a sports medicine clinic, I am going to try everything I can. So this was only the vision I saw and wanted it to be going. And, you know, I look forward to the future. I mean, the UFC has given me so many opportunities to look at data like this and be someone that can maybe, you know, give people advice and things like that. And, you know, we are just scratching the surface. So I continue to learn every day from the UFC. And I'm so glad that over the 4 years, I've been able to even do what I've done so far. But, you know, we're getting started. So give me another 4 years and I'm excited to see where we're.
Yeah, see what happens. Well, Ed, thank you so much for coming on. I know people who are listening to this, I'm sure there's lots of physio students who are going to be, their brains just racing a million miles an hour. If they want to follow you on social media or they want to get in contact with you, what's the best way to go about it?
All my social media is my first and last name. So it's Heather Linden. And then, you know, my UFC email is pretty simple. It's just my first initial and my last name, hlinden@ufc.com. So I will apologize ahead of time because initially I'll get emails from students and it's at the top of my list of the day. And then things just happen. Athletes get hurt. Rehabs go chaotic. And by the end of the day, it's down to like 100. And I'm like, sometimes I get lost. So I do apologize. But yeah, all my social media aspects are all Heather Linden. So appreciate you, Jordy, having me on today.
No, anytime. But I have heard a rumor, Heather, that the UFCPI are taking their TikTok a bit more seriously. Are we going to see Heather Linden on TikTok in the future?
Oh, I'm trying to avoid that. But I mean,
aren't we all?
I don't know if TikTok's ready for everybody.
Yeah, I know. That's what me and Clint said, is that like none of us like it, but you kind of have to like it just to keep up with the new generation.
I know strength and conditioning guys are crushing it, but they're a little more exciting than our day-to-day rehab. We'll see. Maybe we'll do something cool coming up.
Yeah, that's it. All right, Ed, I'll let you get back to your day, but thanks so much. Always a pleasure. So much knowledge. I'm sure everyone listening got so much out of that. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you.
And there it is, another episode of the Fight Science Podcast. Heather is a leader in the area of physical therapy, and her team is continuing to raise the collective intellect for practitioners worldwide. I highly encourage all students, coaches, and practitioners to have a thorough read of her contributions to the journal. This podcast will be available through the podcast app, iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, and you'll also be able to download it from my website, www.thefightdietitian.com/podcast. If you enjoy listening to the podcast, then be sure to head to the podcast app to give us a rating and leave us a review. Thanks for listening in, and I'll see you guys for the next episode of the Fight Science Podcast.